Well, hey, 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 welcome back. This is episode 2 of the Creative Genius podcast. We're still around. We're doing this, we're making this a thing, and it's pretty awesome. So I'm Gerald. Thanks for having me back. And who else do we have here?
We have Lou. I'm back again, and we've got one other returning.
Yeah, this is Adam. I'm back again for the next round, so bring it.
I don't know why we invited Adam back, but he's here.
The plague. You can't get rid of me.
Yeah, well, episode 1 was pretty interesting. We went over some fun topics there. We talked about, you know, things that with different technologies, digital and analog. Talked a lot about music. It's pretty pretty hot topic, especially nowadays.
Yeah, so, I mean, I have some follow-up from last week, right? We talked about a lot of stuff, and, you know, since we're kind of going off the cuff, you know, during the recording, there are some things that may or may not have been, like, 100% accurate, so just kind of want to brush those up right now. First thing we forgot to do is totally forgot to mention our opening and outro song. Kind of wanted to credit the guy who was responsible for that. His name is Stephen James, guy I've known for a while. Does a lot of music, like production, things like that now, but we used to play in a band together, and I remember just calling him up one day. I was like, hey, you know, like, I'm thinking about doing this thing, this project, and I need, like, just a little clip. And he's like, well, what do you want? I'm like, well, something kind of upbeat, something this, something that. And within, like, a day, he was like, here you go. And I was like, awesome, tweak this, we're good. And actually, I didn't even tell him to tweak anything. I'm like, that's great, let's do that. So that's where that came from, and his link is in the show notes to his profile and respective pages. So go over there, give his stuff a listen. He's got an album out there, and he's a really talented guy. So really was a pleasure working with him, and thanks to giving us a nice little intro song to get this thing rolling.
Thank you, Steven.
Awesome. Thanks, Steven. Steven, you rock.
There you go. He literally rocks, like. So that's that. The next thing was recording the Beatles. I had mentioned that, oh, it's like an article, like I'll send it to you guys. Turns out that it's more of like a collector's item, or like a hardcore or hardcover, I should say, like set that's like $200. So sorry if I let people on that. Believe. Yeah, I'll get you a copy someday. Now, someday means the day that I have an extra $200. And even then, I don't think that
Christmas is coming up relatively soon, so, you know, that gives you enough time to save, right?
Yeah, is your birthday before or after Christmas, Lou?
My birthday is definitely before Christmas, so you can do that, and if you want to grab me, you know, the Chronic or any other thing you want, we can just add that to the list, too.
Yeah, that'll be next year's, and yeah, that was the other thing is definitely, like Gerald mentioned and called me out, The Chronic was not in 2001. That was the second album. So my bad for mixing up things. It seemed like I did a lot of bad last time. I don't know why that is.
It's okay. We're not holding you to your Dr. Dre album years.
Yeah, right.
It's all right. Everyone gets at least one.
Well, there's three for me, I think, right now. So yeah, next up on the list, Bluetooth specification. I think Lou had called it out. I think right now we're looking up, they're currently on the 4.2 is the adoption that they have for the specification. I know 4.3 is later down the road, but when we're talking about it right now, we're looking at 4.2 is the latest and greatest.
All right.
Yep.
Last thing was, did mention that physical media was dead. I said, like, where can you find, like, a CD store? It turns out that Tower Records and FYE are still in business and still have physical store locations and will still sell you CDs outside of just, like, the Barnes & Noble. So not quite dead yet, yeah. But, you know, I'd say, like, one foot in the grave.
Yeah, and you still have Best Buy and Target and all of those. They still have a whole little CD section. Just you don't see a whole lot of people in that section.
Yeah, it's not their primary business, point, though.
Yeah, it's not their big thing. And you know, I know, like the Virgin Megastore or something like that. Those stores aren't around anymore either. You know, it's those CD only stores that were the classic.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's all I have for follow-up, so what you got?
Sweet.
Yeah.
So what do you want to talk about this week?
I was kind of thinking about it, and when we were kind of sitting around thinking about what the topic would be for this this second episode, it kind of struck me. I was thinking, I was like, with us all being, geeks and really involved with technology and stuff like that, and we're, in a certain age bracket within our 20s. Do you guys encounter a lot of, I'll say it with air quotes, more mature people asking you a lot of questions about technology and just never really seeming to just understand, like it's this like foreign alien, like sorcery that goes on with things?
You mean old people?
Yeah, I was trying to stay away from that term, but yeah.
I mean, I'm not getting any younger. I'm definitely getting older, and there will be a point in time in my life where I am considered to just be old, no longer young, right? Like, oh, you look so young. It's like, oh, you look so old, right? I think there will be a threshold there. So, like, what are we talking? Like, I know you put air quotes around it, more mature. Like, what's more mature?
Yeah, I mean, I think all of us have those parents that are what in the. You know, most of our parents are in the 50s, and we may have grandparents still here. And yeah, I think, it's safe to say anybody over the age of maybe 55, 50 right now just wasn't quite around at the point when technology was blossoming.
Also, yeah. We just dated ourselves, too, so now everyone knows that we're at least below 30,
Well, I mean... we were born at that time where like this technology just made this huge shift, personal computers came out a little bit before us, but as the technologies just started growing more and more advanced and in different areas of like entertainment, music, our phones, it's just been kind of an exciting time for us.
Like you grew up with this. You grew up with technology, and I mean, I'm just curious here. When do you remember getting a computer in, for the first time in the house? How old were you?
So.
Oh man.
Yeah, like no joke. When I was growing up, we didn't have a computer, just because my family, didn't really like the computers, and we didn't have the disposable income to just go out and buy like a really expensive computer. So I grew up with a typewriter up until like. Oh man, I want to say I was like 4 or 5. And by that time we got like this really old, just DOS machine, like from work that got handed down. And the only command I knew was how to run wolf3d.exe, which would open Wolfenstein 3D. And, I would just go shoot Nazis all day long as like a 4 or 5 year old. So yay parenting.
Hey, that builds character right there. Killing Nazis.
Well, it wasn't a bad thing, right? I mean, like, I guess it
would. Oh, no. It's good development of character. Development.
So, okay. We're good.
Early childhood development of killing. I like it.
Well, I still remember. I was a little bit older before I got my first computer. I was probably 12 when I got my first computer. But I remember in elementary school, younger than that, I mean, we had Macintoshes and computers in the classroom. And you guys remember like playing Oregon Trail for hours and hours and and
Oregon
every
Trail.
Your whole family always died of dysentery. I don't just
so when was the first time you had one in the house, Gerald? Did you have one in it, even though it wasn't your computer at home, did you have one younger than that at home?
No, that was like the first one
was family computer. Wow, that's interesting. So yeah. I think I had mine, my first one was about Windows 95 or so, in that area, and so I at that point, I was still fairly young. So I think there's a fair argument to be made that we all kind of did grow up with it, whether it was we had access to it at school or we had access to it at home. It was around us in every way, shape, and form, and so there's a fair argument. I think that. Those mature people have that we grew up with it. It was around us.
Ian, I kind of want to point something out with that, with that statement that you made, Lou, because you're saying there's always – now, I do understand we have kind of advantage because we start out with it young. But I can't stand it when people use the excuse, well, you grew up with this. Okay, if you're still alive, technically you grew up with it. It's not like you went to bed one night – woke up in the morning and all of a sudden there was all this advanced technology. This is something that happened gradually, whether you decide to be involved with it or not. Now, for people that are older, I can understand there's a bit of a learning curve. You know, it takes more effort. It's something that you're not used to. But for you to act like, you know, for the last 20 years, technology didn't exist, and all of a sudden trying to dive in and being like, oh, this is ridiculous, you know, that kind of bothers me a little bit.
Yeah, well, no, I can agree.
Yeah, I mean, you said, like, you know, it's always been around, right? I mean, like, Spanish has always been around, too, you know, but you don't see, like, all of us, like, going out and learning it in a day, and everyone knows that that's just an unrealistic expectation, but I think very much so, like, technology has been a part of everyone's life, and whether you're mature, I love how you guys keep using that word, I'm just going to say old, whether you're old or not, I mean, technology has touched your life in some way, shape, or form, or is a part of your daily life, especially now, so it's almost like you have to learn it, right? It's like one day, eventually, when China takes over the world, we'll all have to learn Chinese because we'll have to. So I think, you know, using the crutch of, like, you grew up on it, it's like, yeah, like, I had one in the house, and it meant that I definitely messed around with it because I was interested in it, but that's the problem right there. It's like you weren't interested in it. You didn't take the initiative to go out and find it, and that's the difference. It's not because I was growing up with it. It's because I had that interest in learning it.
Yeah, I think
exactly.
For all of us, it's been something that we've just embraced and been drawn towards, and we haven't, you know, brushed it aside or said, you know what, I'll learn this later or I'll figure it out later. And we see that it is something that's not going away, and I think that's a big thing. I can remember a very specific conversation I had, if I may, just a little anecdote with where I was sitting with my grandfather, my father, and myself, and we were all in one room. We were all watching television, and my grandfather looks across the room at me with my cell phone in my hand. And I believe I was conversing via text message at that moment with somebody. And my father has his cell phone, but it's about 6 or 8 feet away, just on the kitchen counter. And he would get up about every hour or two just to check it and see if he'd missed any emails or something. But it was really for a work purpose. And my grandfather has his cell phone on him, but it's turned off. And it's not even in use, if you will. So if he got a call, he wouldn't even know it. And he kept telling me, put that thing down. And so my father finally jumps in and sort of defends me and says, when you look at the arc of this all, he can't not use that. That is part of his life. If he doesn't use it, he's sort of disconnected from everyone who's around him, who's in his age group. While my dad says, I use technology because I have to, because work makes me do that. Not because I want to, really, but because work makes me. And he goes, and Dad, what you don't understand is you don't have to. And when my grandfather was younger, he could drive to a payphone and make a call. And now we can all do that in our hands. And I think it was just a really interesting story in the sense that it paints the picture of how, you know, just generationally, we are very different from those that are before us, and my father being in his late 50s now, you know, it's something that he is in that old people we are talking about here, Adam. So it's funny that he sees but kind of both sides to the coin at the age he's at. I think he does.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting because, like, you know, what Adam was saying, it's a choice, really, whether you decide to be involved with technology or not. Because I could even, you know, one of my oldest friends, we're the exact same age. I'm almost exactly 1 month older than he is. And he doesn't even understand the basic concept of email. So it's clearly not an age issue on top of that. While you do have more older people that aren't into technology as much as a younger generation, because that's kind of what we use as our mode of communication and staying in the loop. But I just find it, like, when I do encounter old people that always try to make the excuse that they don't understand technology because they're old, there are so many older people that I've encountered that know technology better than I do. And I'm like, you're basically insulting, you know, an entire age bracket because you don't know something. And that's what, you know, that's what kind of bothers me.
So that's what really grinds your gears, so to speak, right?
You know, it really does. It really does. It's like, say that you're ignorant of technology just because for whatever personal reasons for you, whether it's you just weren't exposed to it, you lived out in the boonies for the last 35 years, whatever it is. But don't say that it's strictly because you're old, because that's not fair. I mean, my grandfather, who's in his 70s, you know, uses technology, social networking, text message, all that stuff. They had no problem with it. You know, he might ask me a question if something wasn't working correctly, but, you know, if he didn't know something, he made a point and took the initiative of figuring it out.
Well, and I think that brings up an interesting point, because you said if he doesn't know something, and I think for many of us, that's where the grinding comes in, because for us, technology, having grown up with it, we are often a crutch when something doesn't work. And I think something that frustrates all of us probably is that when that sort of thing happens and they don't understand something, we go to Google, we read, we don't know how to maybe solve it either. If we've seen this particular issue before, maybe we do, but when we don't, we read. And that inability to kind of know where your resources are is, I think, something that frustrates me, at least, is that you can point that person towards Google and say, you know what, maybe start typing something in here and read until you get to a solution and attempt it, at least, and then come back to me. But they usually don't even attempt.
Well, right. I think that's all well and good, right? Like, hey, you can go find an answer, right? We all know that now we can go find the answer, but before, you couldn't go find the answer. You had to know somebody, right? Best way I can think of it is, like, we all know how to operate a car, right? I know how to make a car go. I know how to make a car stop. I can usually find out where the parking brake is, things like that. I know the rules of the road, like, I'm taught that, right? So I have these kind of expectations when I get out there that the other people are going to follow those as well. So we all kind of have this general consensus of what a car does, how a car, you know, how we get the car to move, things like that. And I can compare that to like a computer, right? So we all know, let's say, hopefully, how to turn it on, things like that. But when something goes wrong, I mean, your first instinct on like a car is it like, oh man, like maybe I should just start Googling what this is, or G-wording what this is, right? And seeing what it is, or I'll just take it to someone who knows, right? Like, oh, I have a mechanic, someone who's been trained in this, someone who knows this a lot better than I do and that I trust. Why don't I just ask them, because they're going to know the answer, right? And when something's not working right, that's where I, you know, will side with, you know, anybody who comes to me with a question is like, hey, this isn't working the way I expect it to, or this isn't working correctly, what's up, right? Like, because something's not right, something's broken, and I like fixing broken things. So hey, if it's broken, bring it to me. If it's how to use it, or how do I do this, like, no, that's not what I do. There are other resources you can use outside of me, and please use those. I will be a last resort.
Now, Adam, what do you do when things just like break for no reason though?
So, man, that bomb got dropped again, right? Like, and nothing happens for no reason. I mean, that's just the truth. I mean, there's always some root cause, right? We may not know what the root cause is, but Gerald, things just don't break for no reason. There's always a reason. Name one thing something just broke for no reason.
I can think of like a television. You know, one day I just go to turn it on and it just doesn't turn on.
Yeah, okay. So
no one moved the television, nothing. It just broke. It's just, there you go.
So why did it break, Gerald? Why did it break? Did you get it fixed?
No, I just got another television. No, it just broke for no reason.
No, it broke for a reason, right? There was a reason. Something happened. Some event happened. Whether that was in or out of your control, that's a totally different scenario. Whether it was visible or invisible, totally another scenario too, right? We deal with things at the microscopic level all the time. I mean, why do people get sick? Because germs see them, right? But back in the day, it's like, oh, something happened. They just started coughing. I don't know. They just started coughing for no reason. It's like, wait, no. We now know the reason. Come on, man. You know that things happen for a reason.
Well, like, I remember I had a rear projection flat screen television, and, you know, the bulb just went out. You know, what bulb just went out for no reason. I don't know.
It went out for a reason. This is going to go on for, like, 45 minutes.
Yeah, we'll go round and round for this forever. And I mean, so, the rear projection television example was terrible because the filament in the bulb probably just went out, and that was that. And
it was a brand new bulb.
Well, then you are so full of it right now. That's third party bulb from a cheap source, and it was not a.
I bought it from the manufacturer.
Well, then you should have returned it.
I did.
Sometimes
Sometimes
Gerald, things just happen because you're a bad person.
Oh, okay. Well, then there you go. Anytime I just don't know the answer, I'll just know that that's because I'm a terrible person, and it's just karma getting back to me.
Yeah, I'd say that's something. There's a reason. Right?
Car example here. I mean, we bring it to someone who's a mechanic because a mechanic, we trust them. They are somebody who can, you know, maybe do the work for us and. In whatever reading and tests and things that we need to do. But there are plenty of people that, you know, don't know how to work on a car, but could Google or use YouTube or break out an owner's manual and break out like a repair guide or go find a book that tells you how to do it. And so we go to these people as a crutch. And so, you know, it's totally fine. I think that oftentimes we get asked questions that, you know, they might otherwise be able to answer, but it's the fact that I often find them, they seem hopeless, like they can't find that answer or they don't know where to find that answer. Whereas in the case of the car, it seems like it's aware that there's an owner's manual and that you're at least aware where that is and how to get to it. Oftentimes it seems like finding, you know, some sort of support website or, you know, help documentation is impossible for them.
Yeah, and see, and the car analogy is a perfect example in more ways than one because, you know, it's a dangerous thing. If you have car trouble, you take it to a mechanic because what the mechanic has the tools and the ability to fix something, you know, if it needs to be fixed. But, you know, having no knowledge about what's going on, you run into dangers where, you know, a mechanic could just tell you whatever they want, you know. Know, something expensive and it's really not, all sorts of things. So it kind of relates with computers as well, whether it's a simple issue or it's an intense hardware issue, you know, at least having a general idea of what's potentially going on so that, you know, you can keep yourself, you know, it's there's a lot of danger in being ignorant or being oblivious. You know,
well, yeah. It, before we get into like, you know, fixing stuff, and I mentioned that just kind of like that's where I kind of take umbrage with people. Like, hey, I will fix things because that's something I maybe know a little bit more about, or I have the tools, things like that. But I think what Gerald kind of mentioned is really when we're talking about like the general knowledge, right? Like the how to is like everyone knows how to drive a car. Like Lou said, like there's an owner's manual somewhere, right? And it's totally your responsibility to make sure you have that and know where that is, because when you buy a car, you need to know where the owner's manual is, because if you don't know how to put that car in park, you're violating one of like the basic, you know, kind of unspoken rules of owning that car. Like you should know how to do that. Otherwise, you know, what are we doing?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just something that I would be surprised if we went to somebody who's even 70 years old and said, hey, where's your owner's manual for your car? They would know right away. It's probably in the glove box of the car. And I would argue for most people it is. It's very easy to get to and find. If you asked the same individual, where's the support documentation for your email provider, or where is, you know, the support documentation just for even the operating system on your computer, they would just lose their mind wondering where the heck do I go to find that. And half of it is knowing where to go so that when you do have a problem, you at least are there, or you navigate to there so that you can get to the bottom of your issue. Not so much that, you know how to read it or you know what you're searching for, but even if you get yourself to the right place, you have a fighting chance of getting to a solution.
But so in that scenario too, I mean, we talk about the car being like this thing, right? Email, like once we get into that train, like that's a totally different monster, right? Like that's the kind of gas that you put in your car, or that's like the special CD car stereo that you installed. Like those are things that you've done in addition, or whether you want to consider them daily maintenance or things that you've added, that's like adding something to your car. Your car comes with basic functionality, right? What you need to get up and running, right? Here's what you need to do. And their owner's manual encompasses all of those. But as soon as you get into well, I put, you know, Chevron gas in my car or other name brand gas in my car. And if I have a problem with that, I go to that person. And if I don't know where to go because when I got that gas or whatever, I just didn't pay attention, that's not on anybody but me.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough one there because, I mean, it is – In the car analogy, it's something that you are adding something or changing something about your computer. And obviously, your computer's manufacturer is not responsible for those additional things, just like your car manufacturer is not responsible for your third-party stereo or whatever modifications you've done. However, I think it's just important. I mean, sometimes we see these people that read terms and conditions and, you know, in the same way that if you're the person that reads terms and conditions, you know, you should probably read and know where the support documentation for your email is. Even if it's
I would argue that those people do, though. I would argue that if you're reading like the terms and conditions, you are knowing that I'm taking full responsibility of what I'm about to do. This is all on me. And if anything happens, I want to make sure that I know whose fault it is. And if it falls under these, it's totally my fault. But if it doesn't, it's someone else's fault. And I think, you know, those people would be able to tell you like, hey, I read all these terms and conditions. You know, I know I'm signing up for something else. Or like, I go to this email. I know that I had to read a whole other set of terms and conditions. So when something goes wrong and I'm like, hey, well, something's going wrong.
I think I should rephrase that a little bit because reading terms and conditions, what I mean by that is just that you're skimming them at all. Someone who literally reads them line by line by line by line, yes, they're probably well aware. I think in general, most people who are working to consult, I'm converting, I'm now calling them old, just read the very brief, maybe one sentence at the beginning of them or something like that, and one sentence at the end just right before they sign, and they don't worry about it. I would argue probably, at least for me, I just sign it. I don't even look at it. I just sign it. I usually know what I'm getting myself into. And then I'm responsible for pretty much everything and, you know, data loss and whatever it may include, and that there's basically no obligations the company's going to provide me with, whether it's my computer, my email, a certain account, social network, doesn't matter. But I at least feel that I am safe enough that I can find the support documentation if I need it. I can Google to find that, and I think that almost everyone should have to know where that is before you even purchase the product or sign up for the service or whatever you want to say. Because if you don't know where that is, you're asking for trouble.
Now, Lou, have you ever read a full terms and conditions of anything?
I don't think I've ever read a full terms and conditions of anything that I can recall. Maybe warranty at one point of like a computer I purchased, nothing like incredibly long. If it was more than probably a couple of pages, I probably didn't read it. I do know an individual who does read every single terms and conditions of every account he signs up for, whether it's, you know, just some sort of account on the web, every warranty, everything like that, and will be well aware of all of those things and pretty much, I don't want to say verbatim, can repeat it to you, but knows the ins and outs of it.
Yeah, because I'll be honest, I've never read a single terms and conditions on anything. As soon as it's more than, you know, five lines, yeah, I just sign.
Yeah, there's some interesting ones.
Which is probably terrible.
I've looked back on, but I would say in general, most of them, you know, the language is fairly similar. You know, and if you've kind of skimmed one or even, you know, at some point, then you kind of know what you're getting into. And, you know, for example, I went to sign up for a brand new Gmail account. I'm fairly certain Gmail basically tells me, hey, you know what, they can look at my email for ads and all that stuff, and that they can, you know, if my email is lost or deleted, they're not responsible. If they all of a sudden stop working tomorrow because of whatever reason, they're they're done. You know, that's it. They don't have, they absolve themselves of everything.
All right. Yeah. Right. You guys are both terrible people for never having read any terms and conditions document. I mean, you have to at least do this, right? It's like a rite of passage. So if I can revoke your guys' computer cards, like, I'm going to do that right now. Or whatever you guys haven't read. I've actually read through, I think the largest one was 32 pages. And that's like, you know, probably like web formatted pages. But it was a long, dry read. It's very legalese. But I can tell you I knew exactly what I was getting into. And
I would hope so after 30-something pages.
Yeah, you know, right? But I also knew, like, oh, hey. I didn't know this was there, or I didn't know that this was there, or I didn't know that this was even a thing, right? So there are things that you kind of uncover about said service, right? And before we get into, like, all of the security and privacy and things like that, that we talk about with people who are maybe less experienced with technology, a.k.a. The old peoples, or the ignorant peoples, like you guys have mentioned too, right? Like, if you don't know how email works, I'm sorry. Like, it's the whatever first century, like, get with it. But before we get into all that, like, I don't know, I think just having a basic idea of what stuff does or what you're getting yourself into, reading those terms and conditions really opens your eyes to, like, oh, this is what you're doing with my data. Oh, this is where you're sharing it with. Like, I don't want that. And if you don't want that, then you leave. And the big thing I kind of said when I started, like, this, the whole conversation was, like, someone you trust, right? Like, do you really trust the company that you're signing up with, or do you just trust no one and assume that everyone's out to get you and you just don't put any sensitive information on your computer? Because that's what I tell people to do. Like, that whole trust no one approach is like, hey, do you think something bad's going to happen? Cool. Is there anything on this that you think would be dangerous, or like if it got in the wrong hands? Cool. Don't put that on there. Just don't trust.
Yeah, that's kind of how I treat social networking. Anything that I post is stuff that I don't care if the entire world saw. Like, hey, if, you know, this account, you know, got, you know, broken into outside of who I've allowed to see it, and it just showed up in the whole world, is there anything embarrassing, anything I'd be ashamed of? You know, if I say, nope, nothing I'd be ashamed of, then I'll post it. So that's kind of how I run things.
You gotta keep your presidential record clean, you know, like when you want to run for president, you can't have all these, like, skeletons coming out of the closet later. It's like, well,
exactly,
you know, that, like, 13 years ago, they sent that email that had this in it, and we stored it here because that's what the terms and conditions they signed. Good thing he didn't read these.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if that were the case, most of my photos today are stored on some sort of cloud somewhere, and so I would probably be screwed. I mean, I haven't read the terms and conditions of, I can think of two or three cloud services that have copies of photos or backups of information, and I haven't read the terms and conditions of those, so I could very well be in trouble. But I trust the companies that I have put my data in the hands of, so I fairly well think I'm okay. Who knows? My presidential record, thankfully, I'm not planning on running, so I should be clear. But
yeah, I wouldn't vote for you, so.
But I have to say, if I hear one more time, can you explain the cloud to me, or I've forgotten my password, I think we should just remove all technology from that person's life at that point.
Yeah, because I feel like that's like if, you know, a person coming up to you and just says, hey, I can't remember my bank PIN, you know, can you help me out with that? Why would you forget something like that? That's kind of important. That's how you get to your money. So,
more importantly, I kind of agree with that. Why do you trust me to recover it for you? Like, wait, what did you think it was? And then you start rattling them off. Like, no. Don't tell me what your password is. Like, remember your passwords. And there's tons of utilities out there.
Especially because it's most passwords on everything, they're not given to you. You make them, like your bank PIN. It's like, so what did you make? Did you just spew out a random word in the set of numbers? How would you not remember that? I don't know. Maybe things will change. It'll be different when I'm older.
Unless your bank PIN is 1234 or something ridiculous, you probably have some reason why your bank PIN even is what it is. It's someone's birthday. It's something that you can recall, at least. And so just like that, your passwords, it seems logical that they should contain, you know, numbers, letters, you know, special characters, all that can be in there, but it should be something you know.
So, yeah, and I think that's true. Like, if you made it, right, like, you set this up, you did this. This was an action that you took. It didn't just magically appear. This is something that you did. So I think analogies are probably the best way that I could compare this to something. And if someone of the elderly type asks me of, like, this, like, I don't know, like, don't you guys have it? I'm like, do you expect me to have keys to your house or keys to your car? Because that's what a password is. It's keys. It's like, you lost your keys. Where did you last have your keys? When was the last time you actually got into your house? How long have you been locked out, right? Like, these are things you should know. And when you put it in those terms, then they're like, oh, wait, so I should really remember this. These are like my keys. This is like every time I get in there. And yeah, sometimes maybe it's muscle memory, right? The keys are just always there. And then when the keys aren't in the place that they're normally in, they're like, oh no, where'd I put my keys? Where'd I put my keys? And then they just go running to somebody to say, hey, help me find my keys. It's like, well, no. Do you remember where you put your keys? Do you have an idea of where you put your keys? And that's all kind of equivalent to, do you remember what your password is? Do you remember what it might be? Like, do you want some hints? Like, here's what it was last time.
And just like you know, have your keys, you know, at your house, your physical keys, you might have a drawer that everything goes in. And, you know, for many of us, there's multiple keys. There's maybe you have the neighbor's key just in case the neighbor gets locked out of their house. But you label that and you put it on a little key ring and it says, you know, the neighbor's key on it. You have the post office box, you have the safety deposit box, but there's all these keys and you may not carry them with you on a daily basis even, but you've labeled them so you at least know what they go to. And, you know, there's some sort of, you know, password management that's necessary, whether, you know, and that can be anything, whether you can do that mentally, great. If you can do that on paper you print out, fine. It's maybe not the most secure way, but at least you have something. Please don't chicken scratch it on the back of some post-it note that you'll never find again. That's probably not safe, just like you wouldn't throw a key in the bottom of your purse or just in the center console of your car hoping to find it at some point later.
Right. And I'll admit, there's been times that I have forgotten a password and had to go through, like, resetting it, especially if it's, like, an account I haven't been in years. But one of the things that kind of blows me away is that when somebody goes through those, so you guys have probably had it where you reset a password and ask you things like security questions. And when I encounter people that can't even answer their own security questions, blows me away. It's like, okay, so you said if in an instance where you would forget your password, these are questions you would want to ask yourself to prove you are who you say you are, and you don't remember the answer to those? What?
And I love that the questions usually are very definitive, like, you know, what was the model of your first car, or who was your first grade teacher? It's like, that hasn't changed. And you know, I don't know what planet you're from, but the model of my first car will always be the model of my first car. My first grade teacher will always be my first grade teacher. So when they look back and say, I didn't ever answer that question, or I don't remember, it baffles me.
Yeah.
Now, I do
think it actually, like, kind of frightens me a little bit. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, it's a little scary, right? Like, wait. And this is, like, where we revoke the technology permit, right? Like, I think we've talked about that. And I think eventually by the time of this that gets down to the end of this podcast, I think we'll all be on board with revoking people's technology card for forgetting their passwords or for asking, you know, just, like, the basic questions. Like, how do I turn it on? Like, okay, this isn't something you asked when you bought it. Like, you don't know how to turn your car on? You don't know how to turn off your lights? You lost your keys to your house? Like, come on, people. So, yeah, I think that eventually, hopefully, just like cars, right? Like, and we're talking, you know, old people, like, you can revoke a driver's license, right? Like, you can say, like, you are not safe to operate this car. Like, you are not safe, and you are endangering others when you do this. I think that should be the same for computers. I think we should all have to take a test before we actually can own our own computer. You should carry, like, a permit, right? So, like, here's my computer permit. Do you have a permit for using this car or this computer, sir? And like, yes, this is expired. You have to retest. Oh, man, go to the DMV, get your computer license renewed. Oh, man. What, just think about the money you could give the state for that, right?
Oh, well, okay, so hypothetically, what would said computer test include? And more importantly, I think we're finding more of these older, more mature people that are, especially in the more mature area, are 60s, 70s, 80s, are not using computers anymore. They're using a phone or just a tablet or something like that. Does it include tablets? Does it, and how does that differ?
So I think it should just be common computer terms. So that's what I would think.
I disagree. I think there's a written test and a like actual physical driver's test.
Oh,
right?
Dang.
So jeez. So like the written test, yeah, basic, you know, computer terminology, like email, instant messaging, password, username, those types of things, right? Like the fundamentals that you would need to at least operate something. As far as your question for like tablets and mobile, you have to have a separate permit to drive a motorcycle, right? So you need to have a separate permit to operate. Exactly, or a big rig, right? Like if you're going to operate a server, you need like some more training. So I very much think that you could get down to the point.
I just have this picture of like 20-year-olds sitting down at the DMV trying to certify in the you know 60-year-olds, and the 60-year-olds are just sweating bullets. Like, oh my god, if I don't pass my recertification test, I'm going to lose all ability to communicate with the world in technology.
Yeah, you possibly lose your job, you know, because that's what you need to do, but we're all griping about these basic computer, you know, knowledge and computer, you know, use. Like, this should be a thing. I mean, think about all the stuff that you could prevent, though. I mean, like, it would be so much nicer if you had to take a mandatory class to use a computer instead of, like, well, I just learned from, you know, my parents who taught me how to, you know, do this. And I learned from my buddy who was pretty good with this stuff, and then they stopped teaching me. Like, there's going to be holes there. We just want to fill in those holes. And I'm not saying, like, big overhaul, like, you need to tell me how to, you know, convert this document to this format and do this. Like, no, you just need to tell me how to turn it on, how to go to an internet browser and pull up a web page, and how to send an email, and how to do very, very basic things on this pre-configured computer, or a computer that you bring in, right? One that you've trained on, one that you've had your learner's permit on, right? Like, I just think that would alleviate a lot of things. And then if you fail enough times, right, you can always retake, but if you fail enough times, I'm sorry, it gets revoked, right? Like, after the third try, like, there's just no saving this. We just need to pull the plug.
I wish I could have done that. There was one time, I think it was the most difficult question an old person ever asked me. I didn't know how to answer it. They just asked me, what is internet? And that question was so basic. I was like, how do I even explain that where they would understand what it is? Like, just blew my mind.
Yeah, it's like the mall. It's like the mall. It's got a whole bunch of different things in it, right? You want to go to this shopping place, you can. You want to go to here, you can. You want to do this, you can. It's like the mall, but in your computer.
Like, but where is it? But where is the internet?
I'm in the computer. It's in the computer, right? That's when you have
it's everywhere.
Moment. Yeah, the Zoolander moment of it's in the computer. The and just say, everything is in here.
Press any key.
Where's the any key?
Yeah, I did have somebody once ask me if they needed to do updates for the internet. I didn't know how to react to that one.
Oh, if the internet updates itself, you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah,
internet takes care of itself.
Yeah, the answering of the cloud is the one that just kills me, because, you know, I mean, I just want to tell everybody to go outside and look up, but
That was the worst joke ever. Have you actually told somebody that?
No, I've definitely told people that. Just go outside and look up, because I'm tired of answering questions.
Okay. So let me get this straight. So when someone asks, like,
but
what is
raining?
The cloud?
Am I losing data?
Yeah, it's your data raining down from the heavens.
That's it. Those are your pictures.
So they ask you
little droplets.
The question goes. They say, "What is the cloud?" And you say verbatim, "Go out side and look up, because I'm tired of answering that question."
I haven't said I'm tired of answering that question. That's a little too sassy for me, but okay. I have said go outside and look up. But I can say this, like, the usual response I give is something to the effect of, the cloud is just some brick and mortar building somewhere with a ton of computers in it that are always turned on, and it's essentially public storage for the internet. So you can throw all your crap in it and you rent some sort of space.
Yeah, it's like a storage facility, it's like, oh, you know, like Storage Wars, you know, like when, you know, those people stop paying for their storage and then just goes up for auction. It's just like that, right? So you stop paying for it. Hey, if you haven't read the terms and conditions, that may be what they do, which the people who, you know, have their lots sold on Storage Wars.
Dang, how crazy would it get if we actually built Storage Wars for the internet? We're just literally like, oh, this Dropbox user stopped paying. We'll just auction off his account.
Yeah, and that's can tell by like the lot size too. It's like, oh, you know, we're selling this 100 gig lot of data. You know,
whatever starts in it is yours.
Yeah, you can peek at the folder structure, but you can't peek at files. You know, you can look inside, but you can't dig. You can only look top level. Like, oh man, like I can see a show like that. And who knows? Maybe in the future they will do that, or some shady storage service will do that, which kind of will probably bring us into the next thing, which is privacy, right?
Right. Yeah. If you want privacy, just don't use the internet.
Yeah, just don't put it on the internet.
Well, but I mean, like, you know, don't you, like, Lou, you said you trust a bunch of these companies, like, with your data. Like, do you trust that they're not sharing it with other people? Do you trust that, you know, they're not using it in nefarious ways, or they're not targeting ads to you based off of your usage? I mean, like, that's the big worry these days is, like...
Yes and no. I mean, I can say that I trust a few of them, that they're not going to essentially give my data away to anybody else. There's others that I'm well aware are doing something, you know, that is, they're giving some of my data away or pieces of it away, whether that's for ad revenue or some other, you know, economic return for them, you know, there's something involved. But I'm also much more okay with it than I think a lot of people are. I come from an understanding that that is something that's just part of it. I'm going to give up some of my privacy to use the internet, and that, you know, there are certain areas of my life that I'm okay with not being private in exchange for just using said website or the internet in general. But in general, there are specific things that I know are safe in certain areas. And I do have some accounts that I know are incredibly safe, like privacy and security is, you know, encryption is their entire, you know, thing. And so there, I use some cloud services that I know that's all it is. And very little is in them, honestly.
What about you, Adam? Do you store anything in the cloud?
I'm kind of like I think your philosophy, Gerald, is like, I put stuff in the cloud that I don't care if anyone got a hold of. Like, yeah, you can have that. It doesn't really mean that much to me, right? Like, I don't put any sensitive information there, because in all honesty, I may trust the company, but it, very much like I would trust the bank to hold my money, banks get robbed, you know, like stuff happens. And if you read the terms and conditions, you horrible people, you would know that they are not responsible for any of the stuff that goes out there. So knowing that they're not responsible, I know it's on me to make sure that my stuff is safe, right? So what I give them is stuff that I could live without. So I do use cloud services. I mean, I use them on a daily basis, you know, like it's very convenient to have things in one place and be accessible anywhere, right? And anytime I'm by some connected computer, I can get to that information. But in the same way, like really private information, I won't put that in a place unless I know that I'm taking the precautions to make sure that no one will be able to access that, right? Like if I'm using a shared storage facility like the cloud, right? So I have a storage lot. I'm putting something in there that's in a safe with a lock on it that no one can crack, right? Or that I know it will take them a really long time to crack. So right. I'm taking those precautions because I know that things happen, right? And if something gets broken into, the last thing I want is someone to be able to access that. I'd rather they have to destroy it than access it, right?
So I don't know.
Something that sensitive.
I don't know where you bank, Adam, that if your bank got robbed, you would lose your money. I think you should.
He's talking about like back in the Wild West.
Yeah, because it's been a while since that's been a thing. But
at the same, so hold on. So if you, yes, like the bank is federally insured, right? But you only know that because you read the terms and conditions that they sent you that said our bank is federally insured up to this amount, right? Do you know what that amount is? Like, what if I put more money in there and I lose that money?
Pretty sure it's $250,000.
It's a lot of money. You don't know how much baller I am. Like, I'm pretty baller, you know?
I'm also fairly certain that the FDIC, I could be wrong here, only insures if the bank goes under, not if the bank is robbed. I think they have other insurance policies that are to really help with certain said things, like one branch gets robbed, because I'm pretty sure not all the bank's money is in one branch, or I hope it's not. But yeah, I think the FDIC is really only if the bank fails. But what I'm really interested here is, also, do you use any sort of offsite backup or anything like that? Because in that instance, it wouldn't matter what you are, what you're storing on your computer, it is somewhere in some cloud. And I mean, I know I use an offsite backup, and so that's why I'm curious, Adam, if you use anything to backup offsite.
So yes, but it's selective. Like I don't clone an entire computer. And there's always a part of my computer that is like a no sync zone or a no like cloud zone. Usually I'll only sync certain folders, like pictures, whatever. Like that's something I'll always want backed up, so I'll always back those up to the cloud. What else? Like documents, things like that. But any important stuff, like I said, if it's up there, that's fine. But it has a separate password on it. It's encrypted in another way. It's locked down to where even if someone got it, they wouldn't be able to access it. So that's my big thing is, like, yeah, there may be some cloud services that have that information in there, but it's locked. It's locked to the point where they can't get to it, right? Like password management, right? A password management utility has a database full of all these passwords, right? Like that would be the worst possible thing that you could get, but that's encrypted, and that's encrypted with a very, very secure password, one that only I know, one that is written down and put in a safe to where if I ever die, that's the only way that they can get to it. I feel pretty comfortable that I've taken the necessary steps to make sure that, yes, in the event that someone might get that, right, just like cloud storage, anything there, if someone got it, they still wouldn't be able to access it. And I think that's the approach people need to take with that sensitive information, right?
Yeah, I agree. I like that kind of that idea of having certain things back up to the cloud, certain things back up locally, because I'm in that same boat myself with certain things.
Yeah, I think most of my stuff is, backed up on the cloud. I very little, maybe my operating system files and stuff is not. I also am somebody that think that I'm okay with that. There's nothing on my computer that right now, if someone came over to my house and just stole the computer and had the password, it really wouldn't matter. There's not a whole lot on it that I'm concerned about.
Yeah, and I mean, with like most important information too, like I'm thinking about it now since you've asked that question, I've like tallied in my head. I'm like, oh, wait, maybe I missed something. Maybe there's something that's up there that I would really be, upset if someone got a hold of. But the more I think about it, it's like, nope, that's encrypted. Nope, that's encrypted. Nope, that's encrypted with a separate password. Like, I've taken care, luckily at least, in this case, of all the scenarios where I can think of, even if someone got it, they wouldn't be able to access it. And the stuff that they would be able to access, I wouldn't care if they had.
You know, it's kind of funny. I have all my photos in the cloud. I recently decided to put all of those in the cloud. And I think all the time, like, what would happen if something happened in the cloud and they lost, and they were all lost? I think I'd be okay with it. I don't know, but I think I also just don't have like a super emotion, like I'm not emotionally attached to any of my files. Just mainly, is there anything that I wouldn't want exposed on the internet, which I don't really have either. So
yeah, I think there's,
yeah,
if I really,
we haven't even really touched on.
If I lost every file on my computer, if there was one I could take with me, it would probably be my password backup or something like that, just so I wouldn't have to get back into every account, manually. I could, it would just be time. There's that, and maybe one document. Honestly, the photos are probably towards the end of the list of things that I would really care to bring with me if I was going to lose everything.
Yeah, we haven't even really gotten into like data loss as a conversation, right? Like when we talked about all these scenarios, and that's a very real thing. Like it's not just data falling into the wrong hands, but what if we lose like stuff, right? And in the cloud, it's like, well, what if we just lost some stuff? Like, oops, I don't know where it went. Someone went in there and something happened and now that's gone, right? Did you trust that company like to take care of your stuff? Was that something that you had somewhere else or a backup or whatever, right? And I think data loss, like you guys mentioned, like, oh, if I lost all my pictures, this and that, like I'd be fine. Or if I lost this, these are the only two things I would really need. And for me, like, I think there's a threshold of getting by, and there's a threshold of, like, this really sucks. And I think any data loss really sucks, you know. But I think I'm kind of in the same game where pictures for me, they mean a lot, and I think there's a lot of things, but all the important pictures have those backed up somewhere else, right? Like, my wedding pictures, right? My wedding pictures are in the cloud, right? They're definitely up there, so I can access them from anywhere, because there's nothing better than on a Saturday being like, oh, man, I got married, what, like 5 years ago? Let's go look at the pictures of when I was a young and stupid kid and got married, you know? No, I'm just kidding. I love my life. Let's look at that. And what if one day those aren't there? It's like, oh, wait, nope, I still have the negatives, or I have the CD, right, with these photos on there, so I can always go grab them again. So the important things, like... And I think that's kind of my big take on this is when you're explaining things to people, like, related to real life, right? They've grown up with these kind of foundations of, like, oh, do you really like these pictures? What if your house burned down? Like, do you have them somewhere else? No. Do you have the negative somewhere else? No. Then they're gone. And that sucks. But if that wasn't something that you took into consideration or planned for, right, then it's on you 100%. So if you tell someone, like, hey, if your house burned down tomorrow, which is not likely going to happen, but could happen, right? Do you have everything that you would want somewhere else? No. And that will get them thinking, like, oh, maybe not, right? So then you kind of relate that to the computer. Like, well, what do you have on here that is really important? This? Okay. Where else is that? Nowhere. What happens if this computer gets lost? What happens if it breaks? What happens if something, you know, catastrophic happens? What are you going to do? You know, and then that really gets people thinking. And I think... in a way, that's where cloud services are amazing, right? Because you have this ability to kind of maybe move stuff offsite, or in that event of some catastrophic local data loss failure, have things in other places. It's just you have to be really careful about what you put on there, and you have to explain to people, like, hey, this is what you're doing. This is, like, real-life scenario, what you are doing with your data right now, just with this click, right? This click is essentially going, renting out a storage facility and putting all of these stuff in there and hiring a moving company to go put it in there. And do you trust everything that's about to happen when you click this button? And in real life, there's a lot of decisions that have to go into that. Whereas virtually, there's one click and you've made 8 decisions in the course of a millisecond, right? So I think that's just where you have to be really careful and explain to people, like, this is what's going to happen. Is not something that everyone does. And once again, it's totally on you if you don't know what's happening when you click a button.
And I think for the vast majority of cloud services today, they do a really good job of sort of protecting their users and, you know, backing up the information that they already have stored on their servers, so that way, should something actually happen to one of their servers that has your data on it, there is a second copy of it. Now, their terms and conditions probably very clearly state, you know, we're not responsible if that data is lost, because they're just covering themselves, and their lawyers are not, you know, wanting to get sued. But I think it's fairly clear that a lot of companies use, you know, redundant, you know, server racks in oftentimes varying locations across the world, the U.S., you know, wherever that data may be.
Right.
So, yeah, so we talked about, like, the basic ownership of a computer, you know, cloud services, privacy, data loss, all these things that I think we've taken this negative connotation to old people on, right? Like, they don't know what this is or what's really happening. And a lot of that could be, like, improved by people better explaining it to them, or companies going kind of out of their way to really give you a how-to or a course of this is what is the cloud is, or this is what's happening when you do this. So I think that would be good. But there are some times where the old people, they mention something that's just like, yeah, why didn't we think of that? Oh man, that would be way easier. And I have a story, if you guys are willing to listen to, of this time where someone older than me showed me something that I was like, oh, that actually really makes sense. So when I was younger, you know, kind of mentioned I had a DOS machine in our family, right, in our house, and later we upgraded that to Windows 95, right, like a Windows 95 computer, hand-me-down from work, like, awesome. And then we got dial-up. Oh man, like, it was the best thing on the planet, right? My dad hated computers, hated them, like, with a passion, would never touch one, never wanted to touch one, never wanted to do anything. And So me being a kid and going on there and playing Wolfenstein 3D, he's like, oh, well, there's this thing called the internet, right? I don't know what it is, but the internet will give me things, apparently. And he commissioned me one day to sit down with him and actually just go and basically have me drive the computer and him tell me where to go. And I went to this website, right? It was like for, I think, Glamis Sand Dunes or something like that, right? So about the desert, like going out there with sand rails and stuff. And when we're on this page, you know, the page was pretty long, so you had to scroll. And we all know, like, right, you scroll down to go down in the page and up to go up in the page, right? So he's like, okay, go up. And I'm like, we're at the top. And he's like, go up. And I'm like, okay. So I go, he's like, no, the other way. And I'm like, okay. So I don't think anything of it, right? So I start scrolling down through the page. And then he reads a little bit more and he says, go up. And I'm like, okay. He's like, no, the other way. And I'm like, Dad, that's going down. He's like, the words are going up. And I was like, what? That's the dumbest thing ever. Like, that doesn't make sense at all. And then what happened, like, a couple, you know, not a couple years, but years later is on the Mac, they actually switched the scrolling, right? Where they changed it from what they call natural scrolling to the old school scrolling. So my dad was right. Like, yes, I was going down, but the words were going up. And then now on, by default on the Mac, that's what it is. When you move your fingers down, the content goes up. So,
you know, but, and where that really stemmed from was like the mobile phones, right? Down was up, up was down.
Yeah, but it made sense. Like, that's where the content was going. So the content was going up, and that's what you were manipulating the content. And that's all my dad saw. I mean, he never saw me like moving the scroll wheel or clicking on this button. He just saw the content moving in a direction. And he's like, we'll go that way.
And I think
it made so much sense.
It makes sense. But at the same time, I think it's something that we all can adjust very, very quickly. The reason that made sense to him in the scenario that you were this story that you've told is he wasn't operating the computer at that moment. So for him, the text was going up. He said, go up. And to you, that meant something completely different. But our brains rewire so quickly if for some reason that changed, or we go over to another computer. Say I go to the library and the computer's set up differently and I it's different than my scrolling is at home. Our brains can adjust fairly quickly, and I don't think we have a problem doing that.
Yeah. I think
your
you're
dad,
right.
Like, your dad was just ahead of everybody.
Yeah, that's exactly it. But he hated computers, and, you know, he, you know, never touched a computer in his life. Just never wanted to, never did, and never had to, you know, so it's just, I guess, the gap there, so.
But it is interesting that, you know, him having never touched a computer, that it was the natural way for him to understand it.
Because we're all stubborn, and we learned one way, and we think that's the right way, and it will never change, right? Like, we just
bow to it.
We're
yeah.
stubborn. Like, you just wait. You just wait till we enter that term where we're not young anymore, and we're old, and someone else is doing a podcast or whatever the equivalent of a podcast is, you know, 50 years from now. And then we're going to be like the people that they're making fun of. Like, oh, remember back when they used to like call people over the internet? Like, how ridiculous was that? Like, and now they don't even know what like this virtual crazy thing is. Like, what are they doing? Like, they just need to like, we should be able to revoke their license to use computers. So just wait. It'll all turn back on us, right? The instant karma thing, Gerald, like, things will just break on us for no reason. Like, my hip will just break for no reason, you know. Like, it'll be a bad time. So, karma.
It'll come back around to all of us.
Adam's hip was just going to shatter for no reason.
My hope is by the time that happens to us, the technology will be there where we could just have like bionic legs and bionic everything, and it just won't matter.
Yeah, I think that's a discussion we could definitely talk about for a long time. I mean, bionics and implantable technology, right? With all the stuff that's happening now, it's definitely something we could talk about. So, kind of in the spirit of like the elderly and old people and technology, what's your favorite piece of, I can't really call it technology, I guess, of memorabilia, or your favorite toy or something that had no technologic, no computers, no nothing in it. Like, what was your favorite thing to do as like a kid before you had technology?
I'm gonna have to think about that one for a second.
That's gonna take a minute.
I mean, come on, you got like the classic, you know, like stickball, you know, like baseball. Are you guys into like sports at all?
No, I definitely was into like Lincoln Logs and Legos, anything I could build that I could construct something.
You know what? Ditto. My big thing when I was a kid was Legos. And Legos kind of started me down the direction of architecture and drafting. So that was a big one for me when I was a little kid.
So you guys are both in the Lego camp?
Yeah. So I guess you could argue that I also did remote control cars. I built these little trucks.
Remote control counts as technology.
Yeah, so that's where it was. You said pre-technology, and I wanted to say that, but that controller had some computer chip in it.
Yeah. So for me, I definitely remember, at least was told this by my mother, that one of my favorite things to play with when I was a kid was this like little wooden railroad set that I had. Where you basically built your own track and then you took the little train around it, right? And that's like one of the earliest things that I ever played with. And then natural progression for me after that was like Hot Wheels and like the little racetracks that you could set up with those. So I was definitely more into like the car type things and action figures. Like, oh man, my imagination ran wild with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Power Rangers, you know, like I had a field day with that stuff. So. And it's kind of funny now, like, you guys both mentioned Legos, so the follow-up question I have for that is, like, do you guys do Minecraft?
No. No Minecraft.
Minecraft, to me,
I feel like I'm past that stage.
Yeah.
But that's like virtual Legos. Don't you want to relive your childhood at some point in time?
I'm too old for Minecraft.
Yeah, but I also still don't play with Legos.
Man, like, really? Don't play... I guess it's different for me, you know, having kids. Like you get to relive all those fun parts of like your childhood. Like, I play with Legos all the time.
Yeah. So
like, we always have something building going on.
The main reason I think I got into Legos too was, my parents, when I was about 4 or 5, started having me go to this preschool, and, they had this room that had those containers that you could slide under your bed that were probably like 5 or 6 feet long and only like 4 inches deep or so, and there was 3 of them in the room, and they were full to the brim with Legos, and so I could sit there for hours and construct whatever I wanted to, and certain days it could be like a kingdom, and other days it would just be like, you know what, I'm gonna build something, and then I'm gonna tear it apart, and I'm gonna build something different, and it didn't matter, but I had so many Legos that I could do whatever I wanted to, and so the sky was the limit.
Yeah, because...
Don't you want that sky to be the limit in Minecraft now? Like, I mean, you can build whatever you want, and there's virtually no limit to what you can build, and people build, like, entire, like, planets and stuff in Minecraft. Like, don't you want to do that again?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think of my technology as a gaming platform, unfortunately, and I know many do, so it's something that, just for me, it's a productivity tool and a communication tool. But I don't usually game. I don't think there's not a single game on my computer, on my iPhone. I think there's maybe 2 or 3 small games just to get me by if I'm in a pinch, like a doctor's office waiting for an appointment.
Time killers, yeah.
So I guess the thing for me, like, the natural progression, right? So, like, I started with this little train set, and then I got Hot Wheels, and, like, I kind of just continued that, and I, you know, then I started building cars with my dad. Like, I did that for a while, and then, you know, once I kind of got over that, like, that was really expensive. Then I started doing, like, short course RC cars, like, RC car racing, you know, and got into that for a while. And it's like it all rooted back to this little train set that I got. And that's why I'm kind of like, you guys both mentioned Legos as like one of your favorite pastimes. Like, that usually follows through in some way, shape, or form. Like, oh, like now I build, you know, this, or now I build this. It's like, it just sounds like you guys don't have like the free time, or you're not using your free time to like do you, you know, like enjoy just being alive and not getting old too fast, you know, old people.
No, I think for me, I mean, like Gerald said, it got him into drafting. For me, I ended up going to school and working in just being in engineering, and that's what got me interested in it. Was, you know, building things, taking things apart, understanding how something worked. From a young age, I constantly took everything that was, you know, electronic apart, and I never tried to reassemble it, thankfully. But it was always something that was, we were taking apart. I can actually vividly remember, I was only about 7 or something, and we were getting rid of some sort of a, I think it was a computer, and it was a desktop. I took it apart in the kitchen, and I accidentally dropped some screws down the sink, and my mother turned on the disposal that night, and she found out, of course, as some screws went grinding through the disposal. And I definitely heard a few words from my mother, and she was not too happy. But that sort of Legos and wanting to know how something worked and building stuff and putting stuff together, taking it apart again, was something I, you know, got me going to my next, you know, point, which was taking, you know, electronics apart and then engineering later.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what a lot of our toys did for us as when we were young, is they helped kind of mold us into what, you know, our passions are and how we kind of became geeks or whatever our specialties and talents are. Yeah, I remember my first drafting class I went into, first time, you know, everyone's brand new. And as I'm looking at floor plans and all this stuff, it was just the same things that I did with Legos. I'm like, this all makes sense. I've done all this before. Nothing new.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know. I guess, like, the reason I kind of asked that question at the end is, A, to see, like, how that's translated into how technology has influenced our lives and how that's kind of grown with that. But also, it's, like, thinking, like, what we had was way different from what other people grew up with, too, right? And, you know, Lou, you said you were taking things apart at this age, right? And, I was messing around in DOS, like command line. Some people just like eclipse that completely, and getting them to learn that is a totally different arena. And with that goes a lot of training and stuff. So I think we should start like a petition to get that like license for technology thing to become a reality. I have a feeling there's a lot of benefits, and there would probably be some negatives. They'd probably be hard to enforce too, right? Like just have someone in Starbucks like checking everyone's ID like all the time, like. Do you have a permit to use this computer on this local Wi-Fi? Ooh, maybe that should be it. Like, if you ever want to connect to a hotspot, you need to enter your, like, a driver's license equivalent.
For your credentials.
Yeah.
No,
oh, well.
You have to,
no, just, you, just your license.
Every time
number.
You buy a computer or phone, you have to show it.
Yeah.
We, like, you yeah. know, just.
And then
just,
they have to check it.
Just like when you go to, you know, the.
Buy a
to
car.
Buy alcohol or whatever, you have to, like, you know, kind of swipe your card through something that proves you're over 21. It's like, all right, you have a valid computer license. You're good.
That's like a whole another rabbit hole we can get into, because that can really be a way that, you know, the NSA and the government tracks everything you do on the computer.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, it wouldn't be necessarily tied to that. But I mean, I guess, yeah, if you had to register a computer to yourself. But oh, well, that's a topic for another day. So I don't know. I think that's all I had to say on it.
Yeah, so I mean,
we're kind of.
Does anyone have any final thoughts? Or I didn't mean to cut you off, Gerald. What were you going to say?
Oh, no. You're good. I was getting ready to ask the same thing.
Yeah, I was just kind of curious. You know, I mean, it seems like we've beat this one to death pretty good. But, you know, I agree with you, Adam, that I think, you know, there needs to be something or some sort of way to implement better education that old people need to at least take responsibility a little bit more and know a little bit more. About it, because I think it would help them, and it'd, you know, help everyone else who's younger who has to deal with it.
Yeah, it's like they don't get that free pass anymore, right? They got to earn their computer rights, you know.
Earn your keys.
And it was just, Yeah, they don't just get grandfathered in, you know? Like, you got to buy a house, you got to buy a car, and you got to prove that you can own a house and own a car, right? So they got to prove that they can still use the stuff. But, right. I mean, I love my mom, and she asks me sometimes some of the weirdest questions, and I just kind of grit it, you know, grin and bear it. I'm like, it might be this. And other times, just like, that's not a question I'm going to answer.
Right.
There are ways that you can find this out without asking me, and I think you should check those first. And actually, that has kind of deterred a lot of the other, like, basic questions, right? Like, I say, well, try to figure out a way to do it. And if you can't figure it out in 15 minutes, call me again. And I never get that second call. She just calls someone else, I'm pretty sure, but someone else who will tell you the answer. But hey, you know, teach a man to fish.
Nice.
Well, cool. I guess that's it for this one. So until next time. Me signing off, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. So next signing time. Off.
All right. Take care, guys.
But, like, I think we can say it more eloquently than old people. We can just say, like, you know, like, the struggles of people, passwords, and technology or something like that. And then we can just be like, all right, cool. And then we'll just semi-get into, oh, and old people have this problem.
Yeah. That's for sure. Because I'm over here heartless, and I don't think that they should drive or own computers or do any of those things. So... I'd be like, what do you think the cloud is? Just turn it back. I'm like, well, I don't know. And I was like, well, then maybe you should know. You know, there are some things that are better just left unknown. It's like, do you really want to know about the cloud, or are you just asking me about the cloud because it's the cloud?
You know, what's funny is, like, when he would say that, I'm like, whose break time is an hour and a half, 2 hours
yeah,
long?
Yeah, right? Like... I guess it's just a mental break. And I'm like, but who takes, like, that long? Yeah.
Oh, man.
In the can, that's so old. That's like film stuff. That's not a thing anymore.
The digital can?
The digital can.
I don't know. I don't know.
Who's going to take like each little topic? And maybe that'll be a... I'm so glad it didn't happen during the podcast. Oh, thank you. Dude, you said cool like 8 times. You're like, cool this, cool that. With this, I'm like, no, we're branding too much. And I was like, no, I'm gonna have to bleep that and that and that.
But cool's everywhere, like you can't escape it.
So like even this is gonna be like, cool's gonna have to be bleeped. So it's just gonna be like bleep 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 bleep.
Why are we gonna have to bleep cool?
I just don't want a name brand. I mean, like, do you want to really name? Like, I mean, you mentioned something like searching, and you say googling, and I'm like, no. You did a web search for something.
Is in the dictionary, in the Webster's dictionary.
Like, don't say Kleenex, say tissue.
Yeah. I'm going to go get a tissue. You don't say I'm going to go get some Orville Redenbacher, you say I'm going to get some pop.
Some
or
pop
Jiffy
secret.
Pop, whatever you want. Yeah, Pop
secret. Jiffy Pop.
Yeah.
How old are you?
Yeah. Older than you
your
guys.
Your personal technology card
you guys
is
are talking
to
like
remote.
Legos and stuff. And I'm like, at least one of you mentioned Lincoln Logs. I'm like, all right, I don't feel as bad. You guys are like, you say, the first computer I used was Windows 95. I'm like, oh, man, I don't even want to say what I used first.
Yeah, I was like DOS. I'm like, oh, jeez.
Yeah, how old are you?
You said DOS, and I was like, oh, damn, he's old. He just dated himself.
Yeah, see? I'm the old part of the show now, thanks. No, I don't even want to talk about that. Enough about work, guys. I don't want to talk about work. No, I'm like on, this is my weekend. Like, I'm having a weekend here.
We're talking about it. It's not even nothing you even have to deal with right now. So I went to go see Straight Outta Compton.
Yeah.
It's pretty full theater, you know, especially after being out for about a week or two. And of all of the people that were in the theater, I saw one other black person.
Dude, I was gonna say, token black guy. You were the token
that was
black
it.
Guy at the theater, basically.
And it sucked because I'm sitting there. There was, like, moments and things that were said in the movie. I'm just dying, just laughing. I'm like, oh, my God. No, like, just everyone, just no one got it. I'm like, oh, this sucks. This is crap right here. Like, you guys are all seeing this movie, and you know absolutely nothing about these people. This is weird.
So funny stuff is, like, I got asked to go. Like, they're like, hey, do you want to go see it? I'm like, to be honest, I want to see it, but I kind of want to see it on my own. And I don't know if that's weird or not, but I just want to see it, like, by myself.
Just so you can absorb it, just...
Yeah, and I don't know if that's an experience I want to share with, like, a bunch of other people, especially the people I was going with, too. I was like, no, because I don't think you guys won't be fun moviegoers. Like, there's a difference. Like, if we all wanted to go to the movies together and watch something, like, I would have no problem with that. But there's certain people, you know, you get that feeling, you're like, I don't want to go to the movies with you tonight, like, because I feel like you're going to ask me questions about the movie. And, like, even my wife will do that. I'm like, you know, I don't want to watch this movie with you because I don't think you're going to follow the plot, or you're going to get distracted, and then you're going to ask me a question and I don't want to answer it.
What you should just do is, just before the movie starts, just give her a pen and notepad and just be like, all right, all questions must be submitted in writing. They will be answered at the end of the movie.
Then I hear this click in the middle of the movie. It's like, ah, scribble, 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 scribble. And then it's like, so when he did this, it's like, oh God, oh God. So no, so my wife and I will only watch, like, certain movies together. We won't watch, like she doesn't like sci-fi, so I'll watch all the sci-fi stuff by myself. And I'm not a big fan of romantic comedies, so she'll watch all the romantic comedies by herself. But then there's a certain mix of movies. Every once in a while, there will be, like, a funny movie we want to watch together, or an action movie we want to watch together. But it's very nice to have that separation of our likes, because it does give us a little bit of alone time, you know?
Nice.
I don't think I've seen a single one of them that you've said so far.
Yeah, I know.
Ooh, what are you doing? What are you doing?
He's doing work, and then he goes home and doesn't watch play movie. With anything. No, just he doesn't.
Watch a movie.
He doesn't do that. He only has, like, one or two games. I don't know what he does when he's at home. What do you do?
Depends.
Oh, wait. Before you answer, like, I know some free time. Don't say what you do in your private life, but what do you do when you're home? Especially now that you don't... Do you live with people again?
Yeah.
Okay. So what do you do?
I mean... Well, I have other commitments, too. You know, I have a lady friend. And so...
So do I, but I still have alone time.
Yeah, but and so we agree on seeing movies, you know? But I'm definitely not a fan of renting and seeing movies at home. It's not my thing. I would much rather, it's kind of like for me, like, eating out. I don't like having leftovers. I just like eat out and then send them back to the kitchen and in the trash. It's like movie theaters. I would rather go see it in the theater. And then if I see it in the theater, great. If I don't, then I don't really care to see it again, probably. So my movie collection is pretty small, because I don't really break out movies much and watch them. So at home, I mean, what do I do? I mean, I spend so much of my time at work. I end up usually somehow finding to work like 50 hours a week. Somehow.
You're crazy. You gotta find some time to, like, enjoy something, because, like, that's the way that you don't go crazy.
I watch the movies that I want to watch when I want to watch them. Let's just say that.
Man, I live by my own terms.
Yeah.
Terms and conditions. What?
Emojis.
So wait a second. So you're telling me that black people can't wear white gloves?
No.
How do you know there's not a black hand inside of a white glove? You ever seen any movie with Bojangles?
Do you see how slender that hand is?
Are you saying black people can't have slender hands?
I'm saying I've never seen a hand that slender on. I don't know, like, and it's just a white glove thing, and I get what they did. At least it's a glove, right? So it's not just a white hand, because that would be like a horrible situation. But
I kept with the black hand thumbs up this week when I was writing back. Gerald said something about.
Oh yeah, I've been meaning to talk to you about that, Lou. So what was the choice in shade there? We decided to go like Wesley Snipes Midnight Black there? Like, what was some of that? You're just like, what is the darkest tone that I can select here? Just above black.
Do you want me to come to your defense, Lou?
Sure.
Okay. So the very first one that I did, Gerald, I did the absolute darkest shade. I was just like, well, if I'm going to go, I might as well go all the way, right?
Just go.
I have used it once since then, and or in between when I last used it, and I definitely used the darkest shade as well, because I followed Adam's.
Yeah, so what's really funny, though, is I actually paid attention to when Gerald did his, because I was like, oh, okay, so that's the shade that I should use. And I was like, so now I know when I'm talking to Gerald, that's the tick I'll use. Like, if I'm going to do that, I was like, I'll use that one tick down. You know, it was
quick. Let's just dial it back a little bit.
Just a little bit. Just bring it back. You know?
That's like my friend that's just, you know, he's partially cholo.
Wait, partially?
Yeah, it's only on the weekends.
I thought that was like an all or nothing.
In his, like, work professional attire.
Yeah, don't judge a book by its cover, Gerald.
I didn't. I knew this. Oh. I'm just letting you guys know. So
we don't judge a book by its cover? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Nice.
What about him?
Watch The Da Vinci Code.
You never saw The Da Vinci Code?
Yeah, don't get mad at me at that. Like, what?
That movie has been out for years. You have
like, no idea. I had to see it. I don't have to see it. Like,
it was a good movie.
I'm not a big Tom Hanks person.
What?
Yeah. After Forrest.
What do you have? Did you say Forrest Gump?
The Academy Award.
Like, how do you follow up Forrest Gump?
The Academy says there's a lot of good movies every year, and they're terrible. Like,
no, but I mean, like, so in my defense of Forrest Gump stuff, like, you do Forrest Gump, and then what do you after Forrest Gump? Like, how do you match that? You did an awesome performance.
Forrest Gump came out. What did that come out? 92
something. Yeah, yeah. Best Picture, all that good stuff.
Dude, and you're talking about over 20. So you're telling me that you have not seen a Tom Hanks movie in over 20 years?
No, I've seen it. I've seen the movies. So I saw Castaway, right? Like, I saw that. I can't stand him. And he's the guy who's always squinting, and he always has the same voice, and he's always smoking a cigarette. And he's always doing something fucking douchebag stupid, and I hate it.
Figure out why Kristen Stewart keeps getting work.
She's not getting work. She's getting, if you can call that, if you call it whatever she's in now work, I'm
American Ultra.
Yeah, that's not work. That's not work.
She shouldn't
that movie's
be anywhere.
So bad.
No, it is pretty bad from what I've seen in the like the reviews. But she, I don't understand. She shouldn't be anywhere near acting at all. I don't know how she became an actor. I don't know who saw any acting abilities in her at all. She's just a terrible. She just can't act. It's not even. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was J.K. Simmons, and he won an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor. That was supposed to be in the follow up. Oh, well.
Yeah, everyone said the same thing. They're like, the first half of it, they said it was good up until they got their powers. And then it just was crap from that point on. I'm like, holy crap, so, how do you mess that up?
The superhero movie was awesome until they got superpowers.
Yep, until they became superheroes.
Yeah, exactly.
When they were just normal people, it was cool.
So I take back the shut up and take my money, because I don't want them taking my money anymore. They've got $120 million.
Shut up and give me some money.
Yeah, shut up and give me money. Exactly.
You know, I wonder what we could come up with if we had to make a movie like on half that budget.
Nothing like, good.
You don't think so? With $60 million, you don't think we could come up with a good
movie? Between the three of us, I think we can squeeze like an hour and a half, 2 hours of good content out of us, but not with like a bunch of different people.